These are the stories that you need to know about today. A deadly border clash between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Could it lead to escalation, to war? I'm going to be joined by representatives from both sides of the argument. Saudi Arabia's national airliner arrives at Moscow's international airport. The signal is clear. Yet another country is now forging relations with Russia, joining China and India and South Africa and Brazil and Iran. Meanwhile, in the very city that is the capital of the European Union, they are thinking about calling out the army against their own people to stop rampant crime and drug violence there. Brussels has become a very dangerous place. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're going to begin tonight with a deadly border clash between two countries who have been right smack in the middle of the world's attention for, what, the past couple of decades now? One of those countries has more than 150 nuclear warheads. The other has just recently been in a 20-year war with the United States, which, by the way, the U.S. did not win. Now, one other thing. One of the countries is India's longtime nemesis. The other just established friendly ties with India. Now, if you haven't figured this out by now, we are talking about Afghanistan and Pakistan. Heavy fighting has erupted along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. It was triggered by airspace violations, accusations of attacks from both sides. Hundreds have been killed. What is this really all about, though? I mean, does this have to do with India, for example? And what are the chances that it will stop before it escalates? Stay tuned, because I'm going to be talking with representatives from both Pakistan and Afghanistan right here on the Sanchez Effect in just a little bit. What do you say we talk about Russia now? It has relations with both of those countries, by the way, Russia does. Russia was the first to recognize Afghanistan's Taliban government. It has long-standing, historic relationships with Pakistan. President Vladimir Putin seems busy these days establishing ties with many countries. He is, as I heard for myself at a meeting with him in Sochi, trying to keep old friends and establish new ones. Example, just this weekend, the Russian president took sides with the U.S. president, Mr. Trump, by criticizing the Nobel Committee. It's an obvious attempt to flatter Mr. Trump, and guess what? I bet you it will work. But wait, there's more. See that right there? That's a Saudi Arabian airliner arriving at Moscow's Sheremetyevo Airport. It's the first direct passenger flight from Riyadh to Moscow operated by the Saudi Arabian national airline. And there you can see they're showing off their pictures, their culture, both sides coming together. It touched down in the Russian capital amid warming ties between the two oil producers. Why are these ties warming? Well, Saudi Airlines will now fly three direct flights to Moscow per week. Who knew, right? So Russians and Saudis can travel more easily between their respective countries. Look, this is a big step for two of the world's top oil producers. I mean, you know, you can't help but wonder, does this signal real close relations? You bet it does. And trust me, it's not going unnoticed. This is a strategic alignment, years in the making. We saw it coming back in 2018. I watched Mr. Putin cajole the Saudi crown prince the same way that I just told you that he's cajoling Mr. Trump. It happened, in fact, and I'm going to show it to you. It happened at the G20 summit that year. Crown Prince bin Salman was being heavily criticized at the time. Do you remember this? For the Saudi killing of a Washington Post columnist. Few countries at the time were showing him any love. In steps President Putin. Here, watch the video. See that? It's like the high five seen around the world. By the way, did you see Trump there in the background? There he is walking in, all grouchy. When I saw that back then, I was actually quite critical, and I said so at the time. But I knew it had to have some kind of purpose. And now, with what we just saw at the airport, I think we know what the purpose is. So while Mr. Putin puts the charm offensive, there is nothing at all charming or even just plain civil between the United States and China. They're back at it as bad relations between the two superpower hits another crisis point. Here's what's going on. So China wants to control the export of certain rare earth minerals, especially those that have dual-use military application. That, says Mr. Trump, will not be allowed. So he fired off this missive on Truth Social. Watch.
It has just been learned that China has taken an extraordinarily aggressive position on trade in sending an extremely hostile letter to the world stating that they were going to, effective November 1st, 2025, impose large-scale export controls on virtually every product they make and some not even made by them.
So, yeah, he sounds angry about this, right? Mr. Trump went on to announce that he will now hit China. Are you ready? Are you ready? You're probably not going to be surprised. 100% tariffs beginning November 1st. And China responded to that, essentially saying, go ahead, make our day. They say, the Chinese, if Mr. Trump does that, they will retaliate. Here's what else they're saying directly to the U.S. president.
Resorting to tariff threats is not the right way to engage with China. China's position on a tariff war has always been consistent. We don't want one, but we are not afraid of one.
Meanwhile, in the U.S., Mr. Trump's missive, look, whether he's bluffing or not, may have already have had serious effects both on Wall Street and Main Street. On fears of another trade war, the Dow tumbled downward by about 880 points. The U.S. market is unsettled right now. As far as Main Street goes, it's expected that any new tariffs will have serious effects on consumer prices across the United States. Why? Because most U.S. goods come from China. And if it costs more to import these goods, the price for the average Americans that they pay when they go to Walmart or Target or wherever they shop will go up. Has to. And likely it'll go up significantly. All right, let's talk about the U.S. economy since we just mentioned that. So just how serious are the U.S.'s problems right now in that regard? Serious enough, in fact, to cause some of the leading economists and some of the most respected voices on Wall Street to sound the alarm that something really bad is about to happen. They say the combination of inflation, out-of-control debt, shifting world order could even cause a civil war. Who's saying that? One of the most respected guys on Wall Street. Here's billionaire investor Ray Dalio.
Also a dynamic about debt. When debt and debt service rise relative to your income, it's like plaque in the arteries that then begins to squeeze out the spending. And so we have a civil war of some sort, which is developing in the United States and elsewhere, where there are irreconcilable differences.
So Dalio was among the first to sound these alarms about what's happening in the United States. But now many others are doing the same thing. The CEO of DoubleLine, for example, Jeffrey Goodluck, he says there may be no way of getting out of this economic mess, unlike other economic messes like 2008, 2015, all the others. And here's why. He says this time the situation regarding these trends is unique.
Well, it's certainly behaving differently than it was for the last four decades. I mean, what we've seen is in the last 15 years, there's been a number of corrections on the S&P 500. And in every single one of them, when the S&P goes down more than 10%, the dollar index, the trade-weighted dollar index, goes up. This time, the dollar went down when the S&P 500 went down almost 20%. That's strange. Things are behaving differently.
That's funny how he says things are behaving differently. And while countries around the world dump U.S. dollars and experts warn of the exploding U.S. debt, something we've been reporting on, Europe has even bigger problems. As a matter of fact, there, in a sign of the times, they are considering sending the army into the streets of a big city to confront gangs and to try and bring down the increasing levels of crime. And guess where this is happening? The de facto capital of the EU, Brussels. Yeah, that's right. That's where Belgium's security and home affairs minister, Bernard Quinton, says he wants to put soldiers on the streets of Brussels to fight the escalating drug violence. The Belgian capital has been plagued as of late by a spate of drug-related shootings the police can't seem to bring under control. So here's the thing. Armies, right? They're for fighting wars against others. When you have to use your army against your own people, it means you are now the enemy. Trust me, that never ends well. All right, so as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the top stories that we're following today is Pakistan and Afghanistan. They're engaged in a border clash that's already killed hundreds of people on both sides, reportedly. How to keep this clash from turning into something more dangerous? Why did it start in the first place? And what, if anything, is India's role all of a sudden in this conflict? All of this we're going to discuss with our guests representing both sides of the conflict after a short break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. We have told you at the beginning of this newscast about the dangerous situation developing between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Quite a surprise as it developed over the weekend. In fact, we've got some of the videos that have been coming in. And as we watch these videos, I can share with you some of the latest numbers now. Pakistan is reporting that they have killed 200 Afghan fighters. Afghanistan says so far they have killed some 58 Pakistan fighters, agents. We don't know exactly what the right terminology might be, but we are following this story and are joined now by two gentlemen who are going to help us try to understand this story better from Pakistan. We have retired three-star Lieutenant General Talat Masood, who's good enough to join us. And representing Afghanistan from Los Angeles is Afghan-American TV host Samsur Safi. Thank you, gentlemen, both for joining us. General, let me begin with you. As far as you understand, what is the cause for this conflagration, this conflict that's taking place right now?
Well, I think the conflict is very serious in the sense that the Pakistanis, the Afghans think that Pakistan is not cooperating, whereas this is not true. Pakistan wants that the border should be peaceful and will do its utmost to make it sure that it is peaceful. But Afghanistan has been sort of very combative and would like to sort of influence the events according to its own policies. Hmm. So I think there is a conflict of interest between Afghanistan and Pakistan at this point of time, or the conflict of, or the differences in their approach. So I would say that although it is in the interest of both the countries to have a very peaceful and a stable region, because otherwise all their energies, and they are both not very rich countries, will be diverted in activities which are not good for the country. So I would recommend that there has to be a serious dialogue, and there should be an understanding between the two countries as to how to deal with the present sort of a threat of the that Pakistan thinks of the various forces that are operating on the border, which are very detrimental to the peace of the region.
You sound like a wise man and a peaceful man. You're right. It would be great if both sides could come together and figure things out. In the meantime, I guess we have to try and figure out why this started. The Afghanistan officials are saying it began with explosions in Kabul that were blamed on Pakistan, most likely going after members of TTP or other militants who are there. Is any of that true? Can you confirm any of that? Or is that not true? General.
Yeah, I think it is not true. Naturally, the allegations that are being made by Afghanistan are not correct. Pakistan wants a peaceful border. But it is in the interest of Pakistan, because without a peaceful border, you cannot have a good economy, you cannot have good politics. All the energy of a nation, which is, we are not very rich nations, we are poor nations. We have to focus on the people, on their uplift. And if the energy of the country or the resources of the country are directed in the, sort of protecting the borders and having strained relations with neighbors, and obviously it has just the opposite effect.
Samsor, let me bring you into this. These accusations that there have been explosions in Kabul, and those explosions were essentially perpetrated by the Pakistanis. Do you buy that? Is there any evidence that would support that?
Hi, Rick Sanchez. Thank you for having us, and thanks for your attention to this important matter. It's very regrettable that these two neighbors, which are the per capita poorest, one of the poorest countries in the world, and unfortunately their resources are going towards fighting. But fortunately for Afghanistan, it's been past 50 years, and to understand this, just a 30-second history and a 30-second context would be necessary for our audience to understand the background a little bit. You say the nation called Pakistan, the name is an acronym, actually. It's P for Punjab, A for Afghanistan, K for Kashmir, I for India. It's a British colonial made-up country, just like in 1948, Israel was created, and 1947, on the land of Afghans in India, Pakistan was created. And since ever then, Pakistan has been meddling in the internal affair of Afghanistan. It has always supported different factions, jihadi groups, terrorist group to infiltrate into Afghanistan and destabilize it, because the border between that the general referred to, it's not actual border. It's an arbitrary line drawn by the British colonial officers. It's actually called the front line. And the timing of this attack on the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul, is very important, because the week before that, the Afghan foreign minister was in Moscow, in Russia, along with pretty much all those Shanghai cooperation nations, which surrounds Afghanistan. And Russia became the first country to officially recognize Afghanistan. And then Russia became the point of trying to improve the relationship between India and Afghanistan. And on the day that the Afghan foreign minister lands in New Delhi for improving ties, with that India announced that they're upgrading their technical and consulate mission to Kabul, Afghanistan, to a full diplomatic embassy level. On that night, the airplanes comes and bombards Kabul. Just think about it, what kind of signal it is.
But let me stop you there real quick, Samsar. Why would Pakistan care if Russia and Afghanistan have good relations? How does that affect Pakistan? Pakistan also has good relations with Russia.
The reason it is the 50 years of wars and conflict explains that. Pakistan wants a very poor Afghanistan that cannot defend itself, that Pakistan could use Afghan soils for all sorts of terrorist activities.
It sounds like you're saying it's just an old-fashioned longstanding grudge match. Let me go back then to the general. General, do you accept that premise that Pakistan has just for 50 years been somewhat anti-Afghanistan and will do whatever it can to get under its gall?
No, not at all. You know, it is in Pakistan's national interest and deep interest that it should have good relations with Afghanistan. Afghanistan should be stable so that Pakistan and Afghanistan can cooperate with each other. Pakistan can use the highway of Afghanistan in order to reach Central Asia. And so there are so many advantages for Pakistan to have good relations with Afghanistan. So why would it pursue policies that will jeopardize the relationship with Afghanistan and make things difficult and at the same time have consequences, adverse consequences on the economy and on the politics of the region? So I think it's very wrong. There may be some misunderstandings. And what is really needed is that the leadership of the two countries should meet and discuss matters and discuss them seriously and try to sort of remove each other's misgivings and try to work in cooperation. But that is only possible if they rise above their present petty thinking. So I think it's a huge challenge for both of them, but it's a must. And unless they do that, the people of both the countries who really are poor, who are, in many ways, they need to sort of improve the quality of their lives. And that is only possible if positive things occur between the two countries and they work towards that.
Let me ask you a difficult question, Sam Sore, because this is the accusation. The accusation from some Pakistani officials is that Afghanistan is harboring some armed groups, most notably, of course, the TTP. What can you say to that charge?
It might be true that there are actually, because the Durand line that divides Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's the same people on both sides. And if we remember during the 20-year U.S. and NATO war, they used to always refer to tribal areas. It's the same tribes, it's the same people on both sides. And there is actually deep historical connection between the two sides. And I agree with the general that there should be a cooperation and dialogue between the two nations to resolve these issues, especially, Mr. Sanchez, it's so important if we look at the context of the time. Like you always talk about, we're witnessing one-in-a-lifetime opportunity in Asia. That there is so much energy and synergy towards trade cooperation. These countries, their economy is growing. Actually, the two economic superpowers of Asia is China and India, and they both have been the historical neighbors of Afghanistan. And that's why Afghanistan wanted to go to India, because Pakistan have cut off the direct land border crossing between India and Afghanistan. So Afghanistan wants, actually, with the help of Russia and China and other countries in the region, to start the Chabahar port in Iran, which is actually going to be the Asian economic superpower, India's pathway to Central Asia and Afghanistan. And that seems to be not setting right with Pakistan and some folks in the West, probably. And they're trying to launch this airstrike on the poor country of Afghanistan, who has been suffering so much for the past 50 years due to two foreign occupations. We just came out of a 20-year occupation of the United States. Over 1 million poor, innocent Afghans were slaughtered.
But let me just stop you real quick, because you just said something that perked my attention, and that is the point about that whatever attacks are being perpetrated on Afghanistan, if they are being perpetrated by Pakistan, are actually being driven by the West. Why did you say that, and do you have any evidence of that?
Well, I don't have any evidence, but all we have to look at is connect some dots. The last couple months, the Pakistani general, Mr. Asif Munir, who is the real person in charge of Pakistan, because the populace elected Prime Minister Imran Khan is sitting in jail without any charges as we speak. And this general has been cozying up to Mr. Donald Trump for the past couple months. If we see actually the Prime Minister, Shahbaz Sharif, is basically he doesn't have any power. The general himself comes to have lunch with Donald Trump and he's been cozying up. And Pakistan is trying to basically play one other of those proxy wars in the region. We saw skirmishes with India, with Iran. There's been some problem. And of course, on top of the historical issues with Afghanistan that hasn't been resolved, then they are doing the strike on Afghanistan.
Let's give the general a chance to get in here. General, what about those accusations that perhaps Pakistan has allowed itself to be used as a proxy in these accusations of these attacks against Afghanistan, perhaps even with marching orders from the West and, as he says, from Washington itself? General, how would you react to that?
That Pakistan is being used as a proxy by the U.S. Well, I think this is absolutely absurd, because Pakistan will pursue policies which are in its own interest. That is different that if Pakistan pursues certain policies which converge with the interests of the U.S., obviously the U.S. will support Pakistan. And this is exactly what is happening. So I think, I think it is in the fundamental interest of Pakistan that the border with Afghanistan and the relationship with Afghanistan, the relationship with any government in Afghanistan, whichsoever, because that is the choice of their people, should be good. Because if that is not good, then most of its energy is spent in trying to sort of create conditions on the border that will be unhelpful for Pakistan and will create serious problems for the economy, for the politics, and for the internal security of the country. So I think,
I was going to say, there's obviously no love lost between Pakistan and India. Is it possible that this this conflict or this antagonism between your two countries is in some way based on this new relationship that's being forged between Afghanistan and India?
Well, I think Afghanistan has always been quite close to India. You can see the history of these two countries. And I think there are several reasons why Afghanistan tries to lean or have close relations with India. That we can discuss separately, but there are, according to their leadership, they think that it is in their interest to have relations with India from the economic point of view, from the political point of view, from using it as a leverage against Pakistan. I think these are the factors which will bring them close to India. And India, of course, considers Afghanistan very important in that sense that it can use Afghanistan or it can have a relationship with Afghanistan, which can keep pressure on Pakistan. So I think Pakistan has to really create conditions, and Afghanistan has also to understand that is they should pursue policies that are in their interest and not sort of advance the interest of the Indians, and or for that matter, create conditions for themselves which are harmful for their people. So I think the whole thrust of these, the leadership of these two countries, okay, I would even say of the region, should be that, they should improve the quality of lives of these people of these two countries, raise the standard of economy of these countries. And that is only possible if there are peaceful relations between the two countries, and they think positively and in the right direction. And there are 100 reasons why you can say, okay, well, I mean, accuse each other, but I think that will not solve the problem. That will only complicate the problem. And this is what is exactly happening over the years. And I think you need a complete new mindset and a more enlightened mindset to sort of change the direction of the region and of these countries.
The good news is that within the last several hours, we understand that the attacks have ceased, so there's no real-time firing going on right now. Nonetheless, we don't know how long that situation will last. Here's the real question here. When you look at Afghanistan and when you look at Pakistan, two countries that share a border, that share religion, that share partial history, that share a culture, you would think, right, that these are two countries that should be able to find a way to get along. What is it, then, that's actually preventing that, Samsor?
Well, all we have to do is look at the past 50 years, the conflict and the wars and the occupation that has been going on in Afghanistan. And with the previous president, General Pervez Musharraf, during after the tragic terrorist attacks on New York City, he actually famously said that Pakistan has been the front line of American foreign policy in the region for twice in the past couple of decades. During 1980s, when there was a Soviet occupation in Afghanistan, it was the proxy wars of West through Pakistan into Afghanistan that brought all sorts of the famous terrorists into Afghanistan. Afghanistan was a peaceful, progressive nation. My father was an army general during the 70s. My mom was a scientist. We always had good relations both with Russia and the West. But it was during this 1980s that characters, terrorists like Osama bin Laden, were introduced to Afghanistan through Pakistan. And it's no surprising that he was, in 2011, he was found in Pakistan, within the reach of the Pakistani army component. So we have to look into this. A little background in history is important. It was America's stated goal that they wanted to turn Afghanistan into Russia's Vietnam. And it's quite not so surprising that later on, Afghanistan became actually another Vietnam of the United States. And it is these regrettable bad policies. And I'm looking at the tweet from President Donald Trump. He tweeted this on January 1st of 2018. And quote, he's saying, "The United States has foolishly given Pakistan more than $23 billion in aid over the last 15 years. And they have given us nothing but lies and deceit. Thinking of our leaders as full, they gave heaven to the terrorists we heard in Afghanistan with a little help, no more." So Pakistan needs to join the international energy that's going on, you know, the trade with China, with India, with Russia, with Iran. And Pakistan and Afghanistan is at the center of all this. We need to go from this policies of supporting, you know, groups against each other, proxy wars, and join the nations, you know, and towards a progressive future for our people. And as I said in the beginning, Afghanistan and Pakistan are some of the two poorest per capita countries in the region. If you look at that geography, it has so much more potential to join the rest of the neighborhood in a peaceful development way.
Let me let the general get in here. General, what do you make of the charge that he just made that perhaps Mr. Musharraf and others may have tied themselves too much to the West, too much to the United States during its invasion of Afghanistan, and taken too much money, which made him beholden then to the efforts of the Americans and of Washington? What would you say to that charge?
Well, I think, you know, countries pursue policies which they think are in their best interest, and what are their priorities at that time, and I think even today, economy is one of the foremost requirements to improve the economy of the country. And as you know, Pakistan has been very short of foreign exchange, and it has pursued policies in which it has had close relations with the United States, because United States has been able to also help Pakistan economically, and also in the broader context of improving its economy, a good relationship with the U.S. is very critical because of all the important organizations which are so much influenced by the U.S. So pursuing policies which are good for the economy and then having good relations with countries which are very important, and no country is more important in the global context than the U.S. So obviously it's very important to have good relations. Then Pakistan also has very good relations and wants to continue with China. And yeah, one of the major reasons for that is that Pakistan thinks that there is a commonality of interest between, and there are a convergence of interest between the two countries. And China is very much interested in the stability of Pakistan. Pakistan is also interested in getting, economic assistance and also help in this direction from China. So I think there are common interests, and at the same time, China is a rising power. It is the second most important political and economic power at the present. And so I think Pakistan has done a wise thing by having very good relations with China and also trying to have good relations with the U.S. And although it is not such an easy task, but yet navigating it, and trying to sort of develop a positive relation with both countries, and especially getting a lot of assistance from China in the economic field, has been a great boost for Pakistan's self-confidence, Pakistan's economy, and Pakistan's politics.
Yeah, it seems there's no question that we're living in a world where often big powers instigate smaller powers, not that Pakistan is a small country by any stretch of the imagination, but nonetheless that there is a lot of instigation that takes place, and that instigation often causes these regional conflicts that we see in this case. Do you gentlemen believe, and I'll start with you, Samsor, do you believe that there is a real good chance that both sides will be able to come together, and that, there will be some kind of peace that is brought out soon before this thing gets out of control?
There is definitely a good chance and potential, as these both countries have a lot of good people and they're hardworking. They love their country. They want to be part of the new multipolar world and want to have a good living standard for its people. And the current government in Afghanistan, they always say there that their policy is that economic-centric. They want to have a good diplomatic trade relationship with all the countries, and that's why the Afghan foreign minister was in India. But we have to look at, as the general says, that Pakistan is looking for its best interest. How did the 20-year war of NATO and United States and Afghanistan that Pakistan was supporting, and apparently, according to Mr. Donald Trump, took $33 billion, how did it help the economy of Pakistan? Pakistan was in war with its own people. It was constantly bombarding its own people. Over 80,000 people killed, the economy destroyed. And that was the platform that Mr. Imran Khan ran against, that we shouldn't be a proxy and puppet of United States. And when they want war in the region, that we should be lending our army and our people to implement their proxy war. And that's why he was so popular, and he was elected based on 80% of Pakistani people supporting him. But guess where he is? He is put in jail without trial, without any charges by Pakistani establishment that they call their generals, their establishment. They are the real power brokers in Pakistan. And unfortunately, Pakistan, that message of Imran Khan has been getting squashed every day. We see the floods, the droughts in Pakistan, and people are suffering. And instead of peace, cooperation, at least these three countries, India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, once again, you know, gas and oil from Russia and Central Asia, that there's a pipeline supposed to be constructed. We're not even moving towards that. Mm. It's constantly these skirmishes, these interference and meddling in Afghan internal affair. And we saw the same in India side too by Pakistanis.
Seb, sir, you sound angry. You sound angry to me. And I've talked to you before, and I know you're quite the gentleman, and you're obviously very well informed. But I'm just sitting here wondering, after everything that your beautiful country and your beautiful people have gone through, the war with Russia, the war with the United States, hell, we could even go back to other wars with the Brits, et cetera, your country, you're right, has been put upon as much as any country in the world. But at this point, Afghanistan has its own government. It has peace for the first time in a long time, notwithstanding this conflict that we're talking about now. Can you find a way, perhaps, do you think, maybe lessen the rhetoric so that we can come together a little more? Or is it hard for you, even for you, as a smart, super intelligent man?
It's not hard. It's doable. And we shouldn't be living like the stereotypes that sometimes the West try to make of us, that all these people, they don't know how to govern themselves. They're a bunch of terrorists and always killing each other.
Yeah.
That's not the stereotype we should be trying to live on and try to always create proxies. I'm not mad. I'm sad that for my entire life, this is what I've been seeing. You know, yeah. Our region, our countries turn into proxies. Why does the United States have to state that, you know, I want to turn Afghanistan into the Vietnam of Russia? And then here comes Pakistan's, you know, trying to import all sorts of terrorists from every corner of the world through Pakistan into Afghanistan. We should move on. Other countries in Europe and Asia, you know, Vietnam and China gets along, you know, despite historical, you know, problems, they come up. And that's what we should be trying to do. And that's what the Afghan government actually in India said, you know, if you want to pursue a path of war, then all you have to do is look at the title that we have been given, the Graveyard of Empire. Do you think, Pakistan, you stand a chance of, you know, coming and ruling this graveyard? You know, ask the Soviets, ask the British, ask the U.S. NATO. Let's sit down. Let's have dialogue. Let's not live like the stereotypes that they want to make of us, you know, that we're just a bunch of people who don't get along. Let's have a dialogue and let's move towards trade and cooperation and full diplomatic relationship and not meddling in each other's internal affairs and especially bombarding the capital of your nation.
Well, we understand your position.
I think it is
Go ahead, General.
Really, I think it is really in the interest of both the countries and the region to have good relations with each other. And there is no reason why it cannot be done. I think there has been a lot of misunderstanding in the past. And I think we are a victim of that. And I think there is a need to look at things in a new perspective and to see that what advantages can accrue as a consequence of having a good relationship and a good partnership with each other. I think both countries will benefit enormously. Their economies will improve. The quality of life of their people will be much better. They will be spending less on defense and especially on the western border. I think it is so stupid in a way to think that, you know, Pakistan and Afghanistan have to sort of spend on the armed forces to sort of make sure that they are alert against each other. I mean, there cannot be two countries which should not be working together in harmoniously. And so I think in every way, it is to the advantage of India, of Pakistan and Afghanistan. And I would even go to the extent of saying to India and the region that there has to be a better sort of relationship, a more cooperative relationship, a relationship which is focused on the economy, which is focused on improving the relationship and having confidence in each other and trying to take full benefit of their geostrategic locations, because that also is being denied to them because of the strained relationship.
General, let me ask you this final question, I believe. And after hearing the sense of frustration, given the history, given what Afghanistan has been through over the past, oh, so many years, many decades, in fact, do you understand his perspective and perhaps a little bit of his ire for his country and for his countrymen?
Well, I think these things, what you have said, are absolutely right. But the point is that there is no... the point is that, you know, we have to change that sort of situation.
Yeah.
So change the situation in a positive sense. Yeah. And for that, you need good leadership. You need to understand what has been dragging these two countries into poverty, what has making them, you know, have such an adverse relationship instead of having a cooperative relationship. What were those past circumstances which led to that? But that may be past history. Now we have to start and begin afresh, have a fresh look at the things and go in a way that is beneficial for the country, for the people, for the region. And that is only possible if the leadership understands the weaknesses that have really taken the two countries towards that direction. That has to be abandoned. And there is no reason why Afghanistan and Pakistan cannot cooperate in practically every field, whether it is economy, whether it is politics, whether it is strategy, because there is so much of commonality of interest and there is so much of linkage between the two countries. So I think it's a question of really looking at things differently and also seeing that how much of harm has been done to both the countries and to the region by having this conflictual relationship, a relationship based on lack of trust and sort of involved in petty squabbles rather than looking at the bigger picture.
Well, the first step to any good relationship, as any one of us who are married know, is to communicate and to begin the process of communication, even if it means airing some grievances so the other side can better understand why you feel the way you do and why you do the things you do. And I am hopeful that this conversation that we have had here today is maybe one of the first steps in that process. I think you are both very good people, intelligent men, experienced men, who both love your countries and would like to see nothing more than for your country to come up with a peaceful solution to the conflict with your neighbors. So let me just say on behalf of all of us that I thank both of you for taking time to share your thoughts with us in this most important conversation. And we all hope and pray, of course, that this this conflict, this deadly conflict, will soon come to an end. Thank you again, General Talat Masood and Afghan-American television host Samsoor Safi. My thanks to both of you once again.
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. I appreciate your attention to this matter and creating the opportunity for dialogue and talking to each other. You're doing a great job. And like you said, this might be the first step towards both of our nation. I love people of Pakistan. They're good people. I know that. And this is nothing that we cannot overcome. We just need to snap out of it and have good policies. And I agree with the general towards the end, what he was saying. We do have the potential. And I thank you, Mr. Sanchez, for giving us this platform and opportunity.
It's our job. This is part of what we do as journalists, and I'm glad to be able to do it. My thanks once again to both of you fine gentlemen. We appreciate it. Yeah. Before we go, thousands of you have been commenting on our show on YouTube. Thousands and thousands, if not tens of thousands, have been watching and then letting us know what's happening with the show. You do so on a daily basis, and we've decided here on The Effect that we should highlight a few of them for you. So here we go. Here's some of the comments that you have been sending to us. Real Eyes commented on my story about President Trump's tariffs. He writes, "Those tariffs were never about bringing back industries to the United States. The reason is simple. Make more tax money." You know, a lot of people are saying that, Mr. Trebek. The only thing is those tariffs will do is for Americans, like I said earlier, make them pay more for what they're already buying. So I agree with you. Now, Ankama Totep is also writing to us. She's likely writing to us from Egypt. Now, he says, "I am a CIA agent. I, Rick Sanchez, am a CIA agent." Apparently says, "I'm also a puppet of Marco Rubio's, and I may be working undercover here in Moscow." Sounds like a great book, right? Do they pay well? Kidding. Thank you, Ankama, for that comment. By the way, I grew up in the same town as Mr. Rubio, and we obviously know each other very well, but I take no orders from nobody, just so you know. And then there's Alex Steele. He doesn't agree with my comment about a possible rapprochement between the United States and Russia. He writes that it is impossible, considering the comments from Mr. Trump about sending Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine to use against Russia. Mr. Steele, you should know by now that Mr. Trump often says things that he doesn't necessarily mean. So why don't we just wait and see? And then there's Karen and Ibrahim. Karen says she liked the interview we did with Alex Cristoforo. She's a first-timer and says she's going to keep on watching. Thanks, Karen. Ibrahim says, great job. You too, Ibrahim. Thanks for caring enough to stay informed. That's important. By the way, if you've got some thoughts that you'd like to share, go to my YouTube podcast, Journalistically Speaking. Don't hold back. Let me know what you think or what you like or don't like. It's okay. You won't hurt my feelings. I'm also on X, so let me know what you think there. That's at Rick Sanchez TV. We'll be looking for you next time. In the meantime, thank you so much for letting us into your homes.